Okay. First, thanks to the neighbors for hosting us tonight. Both axes are not around. At least Jonathan's not around. So we're going to continue what we left off last week. Basically, we were going through now a bunch of ideas in the Haggadah, starting from, not from the very beginning, but just the actual section of the middle, which is the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the actual story of the Bnei Israel going into Egypt and leaving Egypt. So last week, we did basically the first pasuk from Arabi Oved Avi, the section in Dvarim that serves as like the base main section of the Haggadah. And then from there, the Baal Haggadah goes off into other, you know, quotes other psukim for each part to explain, you know, what it's talking about. So last week basically talked about the Jews going into Mitzrayim. That was what we talked about last week. And now the Jews are basically in Mitzrayim, and the pasuk that's used is Vayarehu Osanu HaMitzrim Vayanunu. Sorry, my allergies are starting to get bad here. The Egyptians basically oppressed us, Vayarehu, from the word Ra, Vayanunu, and they also afflicted us. And they put basically avodah kasha, hard work on us. So basically, basically, a couple points here we can mention. It says here that. Let's see where my thoughts are from here. There's one thought. Why did the Egyptians oppress us in the first place? I mean, what was the point? Why did the Mitzrayim think that they should make life bad for us? So there's a lot of answers, obviously. Just throw out one answer at you, which is very, very interesting. The Ritva in the Haggadah, the Torat Chaim Haggadah, the Ritva says that they got upset. You know why? Because they saw us having so many children. They saw the Jews, we talked about last week, having Shisha Bekeres Echad. They were having six babies at once. So the Egyptians saw that, and they got upset, and they said, we have to stop them. All right. It seems that basically they were afraid, as we see from other sources also, they were afraid that if we grew too fast, that basically we would kick them out of their own land. Okay. And just one point on that, and if you have any questions, you can comment. I think that this sort of illustrates for us the importance of having children. Okay, either being a child and growing up, or having children, whatever it is, the mitzvah, the importance in Judaism of having children is basically that if our enemies, if our oyev, if the Mitzrayim are saying don't do it, you know, they want to kill our babies, right? Then obviously that means that's important. That means for us, we're supposed to see that means that it's something that we need to do. They're trying to squash it out of us. We need to make sure that it happens more. So from there, we see again the importance of can't say that the more children the better, but but in general, that children are and the younger generation, which is all you guys, it used to be us, but now we got too old. So it's very, very important in Judaism. And that's, of course, the whole point of the Seder in the first place, right? The whole point of the mitzvah of the Lil HaSeder is Vigarat Lovincha, Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, of telling the parents, telling the children what's supposed to happen. So here we see also, from this answer of the Ritva, of that's why they got upset at us, that's very, very important for us to make sure that we teach the children and you guys grow up, and understand why being Jewish is important. And for us to see that aspect of the night of the Seder also. Okay, any comments about that before I go on? Yeah. Okay. Next point.
Self-hating Jews might have said that if that's what they hate us, we shouldn't do it. I mean, that's a very common thing. That's
right.
Jews, we don't want to become unpopular. Right. We don't want to hate us. We shouldn't
right.
do that.
So I'll just give you an analogy. You're right. But on the other hand, you can also say that what often happens is that the non-Jews see that we're doing something good. That's when they're going to start hating us. The same way, again, another analogy in the other direction. The Nazis, when the Nazis started, when they got to power, and when they started to really crack down on the Jews, one of the things that they tried to get rid of right away was the Jews getting together and going to Davin. Okay, there's a lot of things they cut down on. That's one of them. Basically, the Nazis understood. They said, also, you can't learn Torah in public. You can't. That's what the Romans said. Also, by the way, you can't daven if anybody who has a minion risks death or whatever. You get shot. So the Nazis understood. Also, they understood what makes us tick. They understood what the importance of the Jewish religion of people coming together and having a minion. They understood what that was all about, and they realized if they could cut out that idea of achdut, of everybody coming together and doing, being Kadesh Hashem, Kiddush Shem Shemayim by davening, that maybe they could sort of get rid of our zechuyot of Hashem helping us. And, unfortunately, it works more than we would have liked. But it's the same idea. The Nazis understood what was important. They got it. They did get it in a bad way, but they got it. So sometimes our enemies do understand what's important, and they try to cut that out. The same way, again, as much as the Romans wanted to forbid learning Torah in public. Same idea. They understood. They understood why that was important.
That's what it also says in Shema Alot, Thursday before Benjamin. And then afterwards we say it ourselves.
Right, so what's that?
They realize it for us. Many times, what is good for us and what is...
Okay, that's true. And they also may realize sometimes when they try to do something bad to us and it doesn't work, they may also realize before we do that it didn't work. You know, the other side of that. Okay, very good. The Seder. So that's that point. Let me give you a few other points now. Oh, I see. I was getting messed up here because I was on my wrong outline. I had two outlines in the same document, so I was looking at the one that I did not want. Here's the one that I wanted. So here's one or two other points here. Okay. Take a look at the next section of the Haggadah. I don't know if you have it, but I'll read it to you. Okay, so the Haggadah says there. Just be careful with her Haggadahs if you have Chavits here. So.
This is one that's not
really
used.
Okay, I'll start at me. You can listen.
So it says, before Pesach.
Vayareo tema hamitzriyim. And the Egyptians oppressed us. It says, Shenemar, havanet chaknalo. And this is the pasuk that's quoted from Shmo. It's, how do we know this? It says, the Egyptians said, let's be smart. Let's be chacham. Okay, let's try to be creative in trying to get rid of the Jews. Ten yirbe, v'haya ki tigrena milchama v'nasaf gam hu al soninu. V'nilcham banu v'yalam in ha'aretz. Because maybe what's going to happen is they're going to get too great. There are going to be too many of them. And then when there's a war, they're going to basically, I have it, that's not for me, for you if you want it. Then they're going to become our enemies, and then they're going to basically leave, they're going to make us leave the land. What we said before, basically, that they're going to kick us out. So here also, very, very interesting, there's an idea here of how nitzchakmala. Why does the ho nitzchakmala? What does nitzchakma mean for the word chacham? Why is Paro talking about chachma, or chacham here? How is Paro using chachma? Any idea what do you guys think?
You have to outwit them.
They what?
You have to outwit them.
You're right. How do you...
Without making them limrod. Without making them... Because if you just say we're going to kill them
beautiful.
All out...
Beautiful. Okay. Perfect. So that's basically one of the ideas. There's a lot of information about this. So just show you one idea. The Ramban in Shmot, actually, on these psukim, the Ramban actually says exactly that. That Power wasn't stupid. Okay, he realized that if you have a whole nation of people, it's not going to be so simple to just get them to start working, to just be slaves, just like that. Okay, they might rebel, and there are too many of them. He can't necessarily control them all. So he basically had to do it b'chokhmah. First, he was going to... The Ramban describes basically how there's different stages when it comes to the Shibud. First, they said that they would... The Medrash says, I think Ramban quotes this, but if not, the Medrash itself says, he wanted to have them help the king. So he said, we're going to have a whole project where we help the king. We're going to build, pyramids for the king. And it was like a really great thing. And the Jews said, of course, everybody wants to help. Come help. He got the Jews specifically, but everybody else also wanted to help. So the Jews said, we want to help the king because the king is good to us. So they helped. The king himself, the Medrash says, came down and even watched them do it. The king himself even put some bricks together. The Jews said, great. The next time, kind of they're getting this not exactly right, but you get the idea. The next time, the Egyptians said, now it's time to build more pyramids, more stuff. This time, only the Jews are going to do it. Not the king, not the Egyptians. And the Jews still did it. They were still excited about it. But after the third or fourth time, basically the Egyptians started forcing them to do it. And eventually when they started forcing them to do it, then they started taxing them. Then they started telling them that they had to throw out the baby boys into the river. Step by step by step. Little by little.
How many years before when they actually volunteered to actually being forced to do it?
Good question. I have no idea. I'm not sure. The whole Shiva was only about... some people say it's only 86 years of the actual really hard, intense labor. So it could be within a couple of years. Yeah.
So, if the Gemara says that everybody got like six in a row except Shevet Levi,
right?
אבל לפי השיטה שאתה אמרת ש כולה הפרוק קינה בגלל שלכולם כבר היה שש.
Right.
אז זה היה לפני השעבוד?
Good question. So it seems like that at least part of the time they already were giving birth at a very fast rate. Even before the Shibud started. So maybe you could say that Levi didn't have it at that time. Al Shem Ha'atid, meaning you knew already that they weren't going to participate later, so they didn't get the bracha even to begin with. Or maybe they at the beginning Levi did have, and then when the Shibud started, then Levi started having regular births, and only at that time the Jewish people started doing it. That's not what it sounds like from the Midrash. The Midrash sounds like it started earlier. But that's a good point, you're saying. Okay, so it could be that later on that Levi didn't have, whatever. Okay, next. So that would basically understand the idea of slowly Paro, it was like one step ahead of them, sort of get them in before, by the time they realized what was happening, it was too late already, which is almost exactly what happened with the Nazis, in a different form, obviously, the same idea. The Nazis, little by little, they started putting in, new rules every couple of weeks or whatever. First they would start by saying the Jews have to wear a yellow star. Then they would start by saying the Jews have to get together and go to this place. Then they would say the Jews can't have minion. Then they would say that, they're going to do this. They're going to have to go into ghettos. Then they're going to start taking them and throwing them to concentration camps without telling everybody where they're going. Little by little, they kept the Jews guessing every time, so the Jews didn't know what was going to happen next. They never knew, and they always were hoping maybe it would be better. So the Nazis really followed the Egyptian model here very, very well. Unfortunately, too well. But that's what Paro means when he says Chavad it's Chachmah. You can't just do it, just force people like that. You have to have some Chachmah, some creativity, and some cunning when it comes to trying to put a whole people to sleep. And this, by the way, anti-Semitism in general, not always, but sometimes it's like this. Yeah. Not necessarily.
No, they were at Zohan, were there?
Yeah, they do their own thing. They watch their sheep, but they didn't necessarily have to build things for Paro. Okay, so that's the idea there. Again, there's a lot more to be said about this. We're going to leave it at that for now. Let me share with you one other interesting idea here. It says here, where is it? Here. It says, Vayareu otanu ha-mitzrim. Okay, that they oppressed us. So Rav Kook and Nechama Leibowitz both make the same interesting point. They say, why does it say, Vayareu otanu ha-mitzrim? They made us bad. It just says, Vayareu lanu ha-mitzrim. They did bad things for us. Lanu is lanu, okay? Lanu is lanu, meaning for us. Otanu means they made us bad. What does it mean they made us bad? It doesn't mean vayarei otanu him asu otanu ra. How does that make sense? You have an idea? It's not saying that we did it to ourselves. Katu vayareu otanu. Him he riu otanu. Him hafchu otanu rakiu. So how would you understand that? Okay, so I'll tell you what I was going to say is a little bit different. I think what I was going to say, but Rav Kook says in a couple of words is more about like Vayareu Otanu, that it made us bad. This is what they say, is that, maybe this is what you meant also very much, I don't think so, that not only did they do bad things to us, it wasn't just they made us work when we didn't want to work, it's that they actually made us bad people. Meaning they made us, because of what they did, they made the Jews be upset, they made the Jews not be able to do what they wanted to do, and the Jews would then basically start getting upset at each other, because they would be so annoyed about their work, that they would start being bad to each other. Okay, so what they really did is they made us bad. That was part of the chachmah that the power used in order to make us slaves by turning one Jew against another. Okay, which is basically what happened also with the nogsim. Okay, in Shmuel we talk about the nogsim. There's the shotrim and the nogsim. There's the Egyptian people that were in charge, and then there's the nogsim were the Jews. The same. So the midrashim say again, the Jews were the ones that were basically on top of the other Jews. And sometimes the Jews had to tell the other Jews, go work. And sometimes they didn't listen, they got in trouble. But once you put one Jew versus another Jew, then again, you're making the Jew themselves be bad. And that was part of the Chachmah as well, which, by the way, is exactly the same thing happened with the Nazis also. The Nazis made Jews in charge. You know what they were called? Both of them, right. The Kapos and the Juden, whatever they're called. Juden Rat, I think, right? So both of them, they made the Jews be in charge. And then they told the Jews, you guys choose which ones have to be killed and which ones have to stay alive. You guys choose to make those Jews go work. And if they don't work, then you get in trouble. The same idea. Okay, very, very cunning, but very terrible, the way that they made us bad. Okay, really, really sad.
Well, you cannot blame the Jews.
What'd you say?
There's a proverb that says that they gave them salary.
Right, so that...
So, like, they give them a salary...
So clearly that was at the very beginning. I'm not sure, somewhere in the middle, I don't think they did that. But at the beginning, maybe they did that when they were starting off trying to get them to do it. I'm not sure at that point that this is true. What they're saying about Yehu Tanu HaMitzrim might be a little bit later in the Tekufa, once they started to really, you know, get them to go work. Right, but that's when they were already doing it, so then the Egyptians were able to go and say, okay, now you started, now you got to continue. Once they already got into a pattern of going to work, so maybe it was a little easier at that point for the Egyptians to go and say, you better continue.
There's less chance of a rebellion.
Right. I think so. But same idea. You really start slow and you get them into it, and once you get them into it, you force them to keep going. Okay. So the next pasuk. Okay, we're skipping a few things here. The next pasuk that the Haggadah says, after the one we just said, gives hard work, and then the Haggadah says the Avodah Kasha is what we call parech, okay, the very hard work. And then the next pasuk says, we cried out to Hashem our God, Hashem heard our voice, he saw our affliction, our amalinu, our oppression, as lachatzein, and our pressure. So then the Baal Haggadah says, we cried out to Hashem, and it quotes a pasuk from Sefer Shmos, where it says that in those days, the Jewish people basically, like, anacha is like a groan or a sigh. They groaned, they sighed, or they had a difficult time from their work. They cried out. And their crying went up, Allah, it went up to Hashem from the work. So the question is, what exactly did they cry out from? Why would they cry out? What was this shavatam? Okay. Shavatam, they're crying out. What were they crying out from? Why were they crying out?
From the hard work.
So it could be from the hard work. That's one idea. Okay. That's hard work or pain. Okay. Ke'ev of retzach. Okay, they were killed. Okay. So I'll tell you who says what here. The Sforno says they were crying out because they were in pain. Okay, it was really because they were working too hard or because they were dying. But, okay, interestingly enough, so some of our Hashem say that when it says Vanitzak El Hashem Lokev Utenu, it doesn't mean they were crying out from pain. It means they were davening to Hashem. Vanitzak El Hashem, it means Nitzak Tzakashel Tfilah. And that's what the Or HaChaim says. The Or HaChaim says when it's Vanitzak El Hashem Lokev Utenu, they're crying out not just from pain, but also from tefillah. They're crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they were having a tough time. They said, please Hashem, please help us. So Rav Rimon, in his Haggadah here, which is a really nice Haggadah, this one is the Hebrew version, but it's also in English. So he says here that part of what we see from this part of the Haggadah is that sometimes it could be both, meaning that you could be in pain, and you could cry out from pain, you could cry out because it hurts you, but you're also crying out because you want somebody to listen. Either you want Hashem to listen, or a child who cries out. When they're hurting, something hurts them, and they cry out. They don't just cry out because they're... Oh, thank you very much. They don't just cry out because it hurts them, but they cry out because they want the parent to listen. How do you know this? So, I'm not sure if any of you still have younger children, but I still have this sometimes. Basically, sometimes you'll see, like, the child gets hurt, okay? And you see he falls, or he, you know, knocks his head, or whatever, and he's crying, okay? He cries a little bit. But then you see, maybe he stops for a second, but then when he sees the parent looking at him, then he starts crying again. Yeah. Meaning he knows that he's waiting until the parent's looking at him, then he's going to start crying again. Meaning he's crying because it hurts him, but he's also crying because he wants his parent to understand what happened. Sometimes it's both. This is what Rav Rimon is pointing out here. That B'nai Yisrael may have been the same thing. They may have been crying out from pain, but at the same time, they actually were crying out in tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they understood that Hashem is going to listen, and they want Hashem to listen. It's that, you know, it's not just, ow, it hurts. That no, Hashem, please listen to us, because we're hurting. We want you to help us. Okay? So that's a very, very important point to remember, that sometimes when we cry out, we want to do both. We want to cry out from, if it hurts us, something is wrong, but also we want to cry out that Hashem should help us. Okay. So the next thing is, let's skip a little bit here. It says Vayar es onyeinu, that Hashem heard, he saw our affliction. It says here he saw our affliction. Zu prishus derech eretz. Yeah, this is prishus derech eretz. What exactly is prishus derech eretz? So here, there's a lot of different farshim here about this. But basically, part of the idea could be that they lost their family life, okay? That there was no family unit anymore. The men and the women weren't together. Basically, they forced the men to go out and to go into the fields. This is what some of the Midrashim say here, and some of the Mefarshim. The Orach Chaim, one of the Rishonim, says, also the Torah Chaim Haggadah, and the Rashi commentary in the Haggadah also, they basically say the men had to go sleep in the fields so they could go build their bricks, and the women had to stay at home with the kids. And that's hard on both ends, because the more the men are always by themselves, they're lonely out in the fields, and the women are home by themselves with the kids, they have no husbands to help them. So that was very, very difficult. Okay? And even so, what's interesting about that is that, well, actually, let me say Rav Soloveitchik's point first, and then I'll get to the point I was going to say. So Rav Soloveitchik basically says that this is even the worst tragedy. Rav Soloveitchik says that if it was so bad for them, okay, meaning the family life was so difficult, that the husbands were out in the field, and they slept out in the fields every night, and the wives stayed at home. So why didn't they cry out about that?
What about the kids?
So the kids, I guess, stayed home with the wives. Maybe they went out to help their parents work. I don't really know what happened with the kids. That'll be your job to go find out. Look for the question and see what they say, where the kids went.
Who said that the women didn't cry out about that?
What's that?
Who said that they didn't cry out about that?
No, they... Well, basically, what we said before, the last piece we said, that the Mefarshim that I was quoting, the Orach Chaim, the Sforno, and others, and even from Tzukim, it sounds like they cry out min ha'avodah because of the work, meaning it's hard. The work is hard. They're crying because the work is hard, and maybe they're doubting Hashem about the work. But it's based on the work. They're not even crying out about this. And Rav Soloveitchik says, basically, they missed the point, but part of the tragedy here was that the work was so hard that they didn't even realize, they didn't even think about crying out about the family problems, that they couldn't be in the same place as their wives, that their wives were when they were out in the fields the whole day, and they had to sleep in the fields. They didn't even cry about that. And that's part of the tragedy. Sometimes, you know, things are so bad, but if you don't even realize how bad things are, then that's even worse. So that's what Soloveitchik says here. That was part of what the Egyptians did, is the same thing as the Nazis. They, you know, they had to... things were so bad that they had to just like figure out how they're going to live their lives. They couldn't even figure out any other normal things that human beings do, you know, because they were so concentrated on what they had to be doing at that moment. What's interesting about it is that many of the Farshim say that the wives actually sometimes were able to go out to the fields to be with their husbands, and apparently sometimes they even gave birth in the fields. Okay, when it says tachata tapuach or ticha, that you I helped you, inspired you, or underneath the apple tree. So some say what that means is that they actually gave birth. They would give birth out of the fields, which is not really the best place to give birth. Okay, maybe a hospital is better, but at least in your house, out of the fields. What's the point? I'll take your question in a second. So they say that Reverend Moon points this out also. A very nice idea.
Were the wives allowed to give the husbands a bed or something?
I don't think so. I think the husband had to stay out of the fields. So, but again, we'll leave the details here for now. But you know, apparently God, Hashem, helped them have a miracle that they were actually able to have children. And when they had children, they actually went and did it out. They gave birth out in the fields, which is basically the idea that even in difficult times, the wives really did help their husbands, which is important today also, that even in difficult times, you know, wives and husbands and families and everybody, you have to remember that even when you're having a hard time yourself, you still have to remember there's other people out there. You have to help other people also. Okay, meaning Bein Adam L'Chaveiro doesn't get thrown under the rug when just because you're having a hard time. Okay, just because you have a difficult time doesn't mean that you're exempt, you're patur from helping other people that are having a hard time. Okay, very important, very interesting to keep in mind. Okay, you have another any other comments?
Actually, you should have.
Yeah.
If you help other people, so I mean, like, how do you help them?
It means that even if, like, let's say, you know, you have, you're, I don't know, you're in school and you're having a really, really hard time, or you're having, you know, God forbid, there's a war in the country or whatever. So you're so busy trying to figure out how are you going to save yourself, how are you going to study for your test, and those two are not really the same category, but whatever, okay. You're trying to figure out yourself, you forget that there's other people out there that are also trying to figure out where should they go, how are they going to study, whatever the thing is. So the point is that you should also try your best to think about other people too, even when you're having problems. Okay? That's like the best time you can do, the best star you can get for the mitzvah is to help others when you yourself are having problems. I don't know about that. This might be afterwards. This probably could be afterwards. But... You're right. Why the Nazis did. Basically, they had a lot of whips. And this is another idea, which I wasn't going to get into so much now, but I'll just mention very briefly. Sometimes people, even if you have a lot of people, if they have in their mind, they don't feel like they should win, and they don't feel like they should be in control, then they won't be in control. So even if, let's say that there was, you know, 2 million Jews that were all working, or a million Jews, or whatever, however many there were, and there was, you know, 20,000 Egyptians that were on top of them, but if the Jews saw the Egyptians as being in charge, if they felt like Avadim, then they were going to act like Avadim. They wouldn't even think of rebelling. Okay? It wasn't in their mindset. They weren't thinking about that because they knew that that wasn't what they were doing at that point. So yes, maybe they could all get together, but they didn't even know how to do that. They didn't know how to rebel because it wasn't where their minds were. They were so stuck on the work that they had to do, they couldn't even get outside of that to do anything beyond that. So, you know, that's another important point about, you know, part of the problem of Bnei Yisrael being Avadim was that they had the mentality of Avadim. They didn't know how to get out of that. Okay? They couldn't get themselves out of the idea of being an Eved and just listening to whatever the Mitzrayim say and just doing what they say. And by the way, that was still true after they left Mitzrayim. It was still a problem. Okay, they still didn't know how to get out of that.
It's easier to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim than it is to take Mitzrayim out of the Jews.
Exactly, right? It's very true. That's why they had problems afterwards. You know, they couldn't figure out how to deal with anything because they didn't have food given to them. They weren't told what to do every second. They basically had, you know, in the Midbar, they got their food and they, you know, there was a bit of a different kind of existence. They didn't really know how to transfer themselves over to being free. Okay, let's go on here. So one other thing that we'll skip that for now. Okay, next pasuk. Okay, this is the last pasuk number 4 in our Amil Vayin Avinu. It says, "Vayotzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Yad Chazakah v'Zrua Netuyah, with a strong hand, with Zrua Netuyah, an outstretched arm, uv'morah gadol, with a lot of morah, fear for the Egyptians, uv'osos uv'mofsim, with otot, mofsim, with miracles and signs and wonders." So it says in this pasuk that Hashem took us out. Vayotzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim. And the Haggadah says, lo yade malach, not through an angel, or through a messenger. Lo yade saraf, also an angel. Lo yade shaliach, not through a messenger. Ela kadosh baruch hu b'chvodo v'atzmo, only Hashem. Shenor ve'avarti b'yaret Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh. Hashem says, I'm going to go into Mitzrayim on this night. V'keti kol b'chor b'yaret Mitzrayim. I'm going to kill all the firstborn of the Egyptians. U'v'chol elohei Mitzrayim v'aseh shvatim. I'm going to basically judge all the Egyptian gods. So what's the obvious question here? When it says, oh, it was only Hashem, there was no messenger, there was nobody else, no person involved.
When you say it's only him, what did they say? We can't hear that from
Elav. Two questions.
I said yes. I think okay, Moshe, you first.
Must have been the messenger.
Okay.
And the Malchama, but also was kind of involved.
Okay.
And also a messenger that was involved.
Okay, good.
The messenger.
Right, so this is, it's the same question. There do seem to be other figures involved in the story of Mitzrayim, both Moshe, and also in terms of, you know, the angel, the Malchama, the angel of death. Why is the Haggadah here telling us so strongly that it's only Hashem? What do you think? Any answers?
That was a woman.
There was only through his power, not and Moshe really had any control over it.
Okay.
He was just like,
that's true. You have to say a little more than that, though, because if you look at Sefer Shemot, we mentioned this, I think, already last week. In Sefer Shemot, Moshe's name is mentioned in like every other pasuk.
Yeah,
and here the Haggadah is saying, no, it's not Moshe, it's not him, and it's not the Malach HaMoved, it's only Hashem. Why is the Haggadah stressing that so much? Lama had Gish. That's later on, that's not in Mitzrayim. Okay. Good, go on, you're on something good, so tamshich. Okay. So I'd say even the opposite, not just that it's a lo rak Moshe, it's a gam Hashem, it's old, it's a rak Hashem. I mean, basically, we were saying before that part of the point of the Haggadah here is to sort of take the idea of Yetziat Mitzrayim and sort of extrapolate it. It's a hard word for it. Okay, to take it out of basically the context of Sefer Shemot. Okay, in Sefer Shemot, we see Moshe as all over the place, because Moshe played a very important role. But the point of the Haggadah and the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim that we're supposed to tell every year is to remind us that Moshe was just a tough tale. Okay, Moshe had no power on his own. And Moshe, all of Moshe's power came only from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore we go out of our way to be Magish in the Haggadah, that it's not Moshe, and it's not the Malach HaMoved, it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's only Hashem. Because Hashem is the source of everything. So we want to make sure that we realize every generation that Yetziat Mitzrayim took place only because Hashem made it happen. Yeah, Moshe helped him a little bit, but it wasn't really, Moshe didn't do it. Moshe wasn't the shliach. Moshe was just the helper. He was like the Eved who did what Hashem helped him to do. But he never did anything on his own. Okay, so that's very important when we read the Haggadah. And we say, Yotiyah Hashem Mitzrayim, that it's Hashem who did everything. It's not Moshe. Okay? And that's why the Haggadah has to point out to us that it's not Moshe. So we should realize that it's not true. Okay, Moshe took his matzah and he went like this to the river and he put it up to Shemayim. And the point of the Haggadah is to remind you, don't get things wrong here. Don't think it was really Moshe, even though it sounds like that. But it was really Hashem who was sort of putting the nace, putting whatever was going to happen into Moshe's matzah.
But,
you're right. But it only worked because Hashem made it work. If Hashem hadn't made it work, it wouldn't have worked. Right? And if Hashem hadn't given the koach to his matzah to make the barad come down or this or that, it would, nothing would have happened. Okay. Well, that's a different question. But that's not a mitzrayim. That's a different question. But yeah, Hashem can choose to give koach whenever he wants. So maybe at that time, even though Moshe did the wrong thing, he felt it was still important for the Jews needed to drink. They were thirsty, so they needed water. So he made it work anyway. Okay, maybe. But that's not even in Mitzrayim, so I don't think we have to worry about that so much for now.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so here's another interesting point. Okay, the next section, we're skipping a little bit here. It says afterwards, after that pasuk, we say that, we go through the Eser Makot, right? The Haggadah has a drasha where it says, that Hashem said he's going to take us out with all these different things, and the Haggadah basically says that each one is referring to two. Okay, Yad Chazaka is two words, Zrona to Yad is two words, Moragadol is two words, Ototz is plural, is Lashon Rabim, so that's two, Moftim is Lashon Rabim, that's all 10. 2 + 2 + 2 + 2 + 2 = 10. Because that's the Eser Makot. So basically then what we have is we mentioned Eser Makot, Dam, Tzardia, Kinim, Arov, and we all know there's a famous minhag the Ramah brings down that we spill a little bit of wine from our cup. Who knows why? Why would we do that?
Show that we're also sad with the, we're not happy, hey, look, they are, our enemies fell. We're
okay.
Happy that we got free, not happy that they fell.
Okay, interesting. So I still haven't found that inside. That's the answer that everybody knows, and I haven't seen it actually inside. It's not what the Maharil, who's the Ramah actually is quoting here. The Maharil actually says something else. He says, the reason we spill our wine from our cup or our grape juice from our cup is that shows that we defeated them, we defeated our enemies, and then we were saved. How does that make sense, right? That doesn't quite fit. That's what he's saying, right. That's not what the Maharil says. The Maharil is one of the Rishonim in Ashkenaz. He's the one that the Ramah is getting this from here. The Ramah says that you spill out some of your wine from the cup, but it doesn't really make sense. What does that mean? We defeated them and we were saved. Why did we spill out wine? So Rav Rimon, in his Haggadah, actually has a nice explanation to explain this idea, what he's trying to say. Basically, he says that the following. The suffering of the Egyptians, and this is related to what you said before, the suffering of the Egyptians basically is symbolized by the fact that we take a little bit of the wine out of the cup. Okay, meaning when we take the wine out of the cup, that is ki'ilu, the suffering. We're trying to represent the suffering that the Egyptians, our enemies, had. Then what we do is we drink our cup of wine only after that wine has been after that little bit of wine has been removed, to show us that we don't want to get their suffering. Okay, they suffered and we don't want to get their suffering. Okay, but basically, what he wants to say is that we're hoping here. This is basically what Rav wants to say, is that in Egypt that's what happened. Okay, in Egypt, yes, we did suffer a long way, but at the end when we got out of Mitzrayim, so then we didn't really suffer. We did suffer, but we didn't suffer so much. So what he wants to say basically is this is sort of like a prayer. It's almost like a prayer that we're asking, just like in Egypt, where we want to say that, you know, we take the suffering out of the cup and we don't suffer. We hope that on the way to the final galut, the final gula, that we also, it's like a prayer, we don't want to suffer either. Meaning we want our enemies to suffer if they're attacking us, but we don't want to suffer either. So we take a little bit of wine out of the cup, that's their suffering, and we drink the cup afterwards to show that we don't want to suffer. again, we do suffer, unfortunately. That's probably why part of the reason why we want to have this prayer, this idea, is because we do suffer through a lot of the process of galut, and we're showing that we want to hopefully get to the point that we're not going to suffer, that we our enemies will suffer, and we're not going to suffer at all. Interesting idea, okay? It's, again, not what we would have thought. I think the answer that you guys gave is a little bit more clear-cut, but that's not really what the Maharil says. So, anyway, that's that point. Okay, let's go on here. Okay, the next section, there's an interesting thing where the Haggadah goes through all these different opinions about how many makot were there in Mitzrayim. And one person says there was 50 makot, one person says there was 200 makot, one person says it was 250 makot, right?
About eight.
Whatever it was. Say again?
Right.
You got the answer. Very good. The question was, why do we care how many makot there were in Mitzrayim? Who cares if there was 50 or 200 or 250? What's the difference? What does it matter? So the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, actually says what you said. It's probably where you knew it from already. The Gra says, well, there's a special pasuk in Bishalach which says that Hashem gives a special bracha to Bnei Israel, that any machala, anything that went bad for the Egyptians, anything that that the Egyptians got as a makah, I'm not going to give on you. Okay, meaning if you keep the mitzvot and you do what I say, then you're not going to get any of the machalot that the Egyptians got. So the more makot that we gave to the Egyptians, the more makot the Bnei Israel will not get if they follow the Torah.
But
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what are you saying? Well, no, the Mitzrayim, the Chachamim didn't actually do it on the Jews. They just did it. They were able to do it, but they didn't actually do it to make the Jews get hurt. I don't think. There's a different question about that. Maybe the whole Dam in Mitzrayim also affected the Jews in general. I mean, some farshim actually say that when the blood came, actually, even the Jewish water also had blood in it. So, what do they drink already? It's enough for now. But I think everybody says that what they did, the Chachamim didn't actually hurt the Jews at all. Just they were just showing they could do it also, and they were just saying we're just as good as you. Anyway, so that's what the Vilna Gaon says. The more makot that we give, meaning the more makot there are, the better it is for Bnei Yisrael. You know, they won't get any of these makot later. But there's another, yeah, not.
If they go on the right path of Hashem.
Right. Im shama tishma v'kol hashem l'kach. That's what
the
pasuk says.
Exactly. I mean, you're saying you won't get...
I think that's what, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised that. And if he hadn't said that, maybe they would have gotten. I mean, maybe if they're in the Midbar. Okay, so maybe if Hashem wasn't protecting them, then maybe the scorpions would come and maybe they would get hurt. Maybe it would be too hot for them. Whatever. I guess what the point is that if not for Hashem's promise, it would have been natural. I mean, maybe if naturally mitat hateva, something bad would have happened to them. One of these machlo would have happened to them, so then they would have gotten hurt. But Hashem is saying, even if al pi hateva something bad would have happened to you, I will make sure that doesn't happen. Okay, I mean, even if, let's say, somebody has a disease. Somebody in Bnei Israel has a disease and it's very contagious. Okay, everyone else would get it. Hashem says, but if you're keeping the Torah, I'm going to promise you, at least in the Midbar, I'm going to promise you that nothing's going to happen to you. You're not going to get sick. Okay, but I don't know if that is relevant. Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know if that's relevant for what we're talking about now. Okay, anyway, we don't have a minute or two left, so let's just finish up one or two more things. Very, very important idea for Dayenu. Okay, the next piece of the Haggadah is Dayenu after that. What is Dayenu all about? Okay, meaning we say that if Hashem hadn't taken us out of Mitzrayim, Hashem hadn't killed the Egyptians or their gods, okay, then it would have been enough. I must speak loud, and it was Dayenu. Why is that would have been enough? Then they would have attacked us, and they would have killed us, or they would have stopped us from leaving Mitzrayim. Okay, why is that enough? When it says, you know, had Hashem brought us across the river, across the Yamsuf, but Mosi picked our kinu al garabim shana, but if he hadn't given us food for 40 years, it would have been enough. I had Dayenu, must speak. How can they would have died in the desert? How is it must speak? What does Dayenu mean? What is it all about? To say that, you know, each of these steps, had Hashem not done this, it would have been enough. It wouldn't have been enough. So what does it mean?
What do you say? Yeah, brush to say thank you.
Okay, good. So that's one answer. Okay. So the Malbim actually says what you said. The Malbim says that every step along the way, it would have been enough of a reason to say to give Hakar a Tov. That's answer number one. Again, big Makatsir here. Yeah.
אולי בגלל שכאילו הם רוצים להראות את הגדולות של השם הזמנים. אם לא היית עושה את זה ואת זה, אז אנחנו היינו.
Okay, good. So if I understand you correctly, then I think that's the Shibboleth HaLakha says something similar to that, actually. The Shibboleth HaLakha is one of the Rishonim, also the Torah Chayim HaGadah. So he says that that each miracle by itself would have been a big enough miracle to be like a big thing, to be like chashuv, even, you know, without all the rest of them. So you still have to ask, well, what does that mean? You know, still we would have died in Midbar, or they would have, the Egyptians would have killed us. So Rav Rimon explains it like this. He says what's going on here is basically we have to realize that every step of Gula, every shalav of Gula is a really important part of the process. Mm-hmm. And we have to recognize that that role is part of, that part of the process is part of the, is shalav shal talicha Gula, and say thank you for it. That's maybe what it means. That every miracle is a big enough miracle to realize this is a chilek mi Gula. And I have to say thank you to Hashem for every single step along the way.
And should we say halal for each part of the, each part?
I'm not sure what you mean by that, but...
Each part, something happened on a different day.
Right.
So we came to Israel, when did that happen? What day did Yeshua come to Israel?
Okay, so that's a good question. When
we actually say halal on that day, we say halal on each part of the Dayenu.
So Yom for you, in the Yom HaTzmut literature, they actually talk about that question. What, is there any source that's, that they said halal the day they entered, that Yeshua entered Eretz Israel? So I think they brought a Talmud Yerushalmi about that. I don't remember the whole story. There is, they talk about that. It's not, he probably didn't, but there's, they try to give reasons why. Maybe he didn't. But here, you know, the idea is that through the Gula, you have to remember that every step along the way is an important step, and thank Hashem for every step, which again is very important for when it comes to Yom HaTzmaut, and we're not there yet, but that idea of realizing what we're in now is part of the Gula. We're not there yet, and we have a long way to go, but we have to thank Hashem for what we're up to. Same thing through Mitzrayim. Every step along the way in Mitzrayim was also very important. We have to thank Hashem for every single one. Okay. I think maybe we will... I think we'll stop here. We did not get to Raman Gamliel, to the different parts of the Seder, but I think we'll stop there for now. Any other questions or comments? No? Okay. Ezra Hashem, hopefully we should make the Seder a very special time, and we'll thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything, and learn the Torah for Nagara. It should be HaKashar Sameach for everybody. Yeah.
Wait, Yeshka's
all?
כאילו, לא, יש כאן משפחות ביד בניירים.
שכל הכל בסדר?
כן, כאילו, לא, לכל הלילה. אפילו שהם יושבים.
Really?
מתחילים את ה...
Could be, I never saw it, but it could be. Saying, it's real shimurim, yeah? Yeah, okay. It's a nice minute that they came up with that. I've never heard it anywhere else, but that's fine. Saying if you, you know... You might have some visitors in your house overnight, and they may not be human. They might be animals, if you know what I mean. Saying the cats might come in and eat up all your food.
last week you said why ma bichlal lavan kashur bekol ha.
Lavan? Oh, lavan the person, not lavan the color. Okay, yeah, right.
He didn't remember the answer why.
Oh, you remember what we said? Basically, we said he might have been the first one to try to destroy the Jews as like a people. I mean, because Yaakov Avinu was the first one to have a family that was like a Yehudi, sort of. So Laban might have been the first one to try to destroy them. The same way the power tried to destroy them. That was one idea. And I think we said one other thing that was like the beginning of the process. I mean, once the Mishpacha of Yaakov became a Mishpacha, so then Laban sent, he tried to get rid of them. In the end, they left. Okay, and eventually they went down to Mitzrayim after that. But the whole story of Bnei Yisrael basically started at Laban's house because he Yaakov married his two daughters, whatever, something like that.
Anyway.
Okay.
Oh, very, very nice. Too bad there's not a third. A third shoe.
Oh yeah.